Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Art Hu to the broadcast. Art is the Senior Vice President and Global Chief Information Officer of Lenovo, a Chinese multinational technology company with headquarters in Beijing, China. As CIO, Art manages teams in both the U.S. and China, and is responsible for the overall delivery of information services, digital technology, and business transformation. Prior to Lenovo, Art spent 8 years as a consultant at McKinsey. In this interview, Art asserts that as digital disruption accelerates, CIOs have to lead the way in showing the organization how technology can be embedded into the business and how technology can create new opportunity for companies and their customers. We also discuss Lenovo's IT roadmap, the commonalities and differences between the working in the US and China, the three intersecting elements of business transformation, and a variety of other topics. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you.
The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by Transmit Security. Transmit Security designs and develops platforms that address problems in security and usability by making it easy for developers to implement advanced authentication techniques ranging from biometrics to behavioral profiling. As the risk of cyber attacks and hacks increase, companies need a more effective way of preventing unauthorized access. I recently caught up with the Transmit Security CEO, Mickey Budai. This week, Mickey provides his top tips for legacy companies struggling with the management of in-house legacy systems.
The first one I call legacy. I'm seeing quite a few large enterprises struggling today with legacy in-house developed systems. These are systems that were developed 10 years ago, sometimes 20 years ago. They're extremely hard to maintain. They were developed using technologies that are no longer supported and require skills that are relatively hard to get today. Many of these legacy systems are core strategic systems and as such are connected to many other systems and processes in the organization. And replacing them is almost impossible. Data migration is a nightmare. Redoing all the interfaces is a nightmare. Even identifying the interfaces is very complex. On the other end, I'm seeing large enterprises today rushing into what I call do-it-yourself large-scale development projects of very similar systems. These projects are basically the legacy systems of the future. In terms of 10 years from now, CIOs are going to face the very same problem they are facing today with their legacy in-house developed systems. I think that as an enterprise, you need an extremely good reason to adopt a do-it-yourself over a buy decision. Your architects may tell you that they can build it, but no matter how much you try, you won't be able to estimate the total cost of the project over the next 10 years, nor the time it's going to take you to complete the task. My suggestion is to focus your development efforts on building interfaces to all your existing systems so you can more easily plug in your services. Don't focus your efforts on building the legacy of the future.
Welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you, Peter. Long-time listener, so very excited to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
You're kind to mention that, Art. I've been looking forward to speaking with you as well. Art, I thought we would begin with your role. Most people who'd be listening to this would certainly know Lenovo. But as a technology firm and a person who runs the IT as the CIO of that technology firm, be interested in your own words to describe your purview.
Yes, absolutely. So as the CIO and business transformation leader at Lenovo, that involves the basics, which are really around the foundation and keeping our business running. So all the things you would imagine there about our workspace, around our private and hybrid cloud are within the purview. So everything that needs and goes into creating a good employee experience. The other aspect, which makes it a dual role from my view, is really around the business transformation. And in that role for the company, I really focus on helping define and evolve our business processes and our business models that will ultimately help us serve our customers better and improve Lenovo's competitiveness.
That's excellent. And as you mentioned, you also have the responsibilities for business transformation. You alluded to that a moment ago as well. How do you define that? How do you define the breadbasket as to what business transformation entails?
That's a very interesting question. So I think fundamentally it really is about the intersection of three things. And I think about business transformation with the company of being one, understanding what our company's strategy is. So what it is that we're trying to do and what needs to be done that we can accelerate the implementation and landing of that strategy. The second aspect is really having a good grasp and being on the ground and knowing what's happening in the industry. And I think that's become more and more important as the competitive landscape gets more intense and we're facing more uncertainty in the markets that and segments in which we compete. And then the third aspect is really having a very firm command of the technology trends that we think are relevant and we can bring to bear in the form of technologies that will help better enable our business. So I think business transformation is really sitting at the crossroads of those three areas and then how we apply technologies in a very practical way for Lenovo.
And I wonder if you could take a moment and talk a bit about some of the aspects of your strategic roadmap, some of the things that you and the team are focused on as you look forward.
Well, absolutely. And here, maybe I'll take a step back and apply it in the context of Lenovo. As a company, we have a very clear three-wave strategy. PC in the first wave, data center and our mobility business in the second wave, and the third wave around next generation devices, as well as AI-enabled computing, both in the data center, as well as for consumers. And so from a strategic roadmap capability, I think it's really about, right, our approach is how Lenovo can use technology to gain agility using some of the digital techniques that will help us better navigate uncertainty. I think about it as trying to help, right, especially when we're facing an uncertain arena, that we can run some more experiments that give us more information about our landscape and what's happening. And so, right, when we design our strategic roadmap, it's very much about how do we connect more parts of our business in more holistic ways. And so practically, then the strategic roadmap, I think around three sub-areas. Right, the first one is with respect to the business itself. So what are the business initiatives that will directly improve our capabilities, whether that's foundation or if that's something aspirational. It might be something like improving our internal ability to process orders with fewer errors and fewer return rates. Right? Or it might be improving experience by being able to deliver seamless quotes to our commercial customers more quickly. And so that's the first bucket of strategic roadmap items. The second one is really focused around our own technology and our architecture. And this is so important because I think we never want to miss a trend and we never want to fall behind in terms of making sure our technology is modern and able to meet the demands that the business is placing on it. And so as new technologies emerge, we want to be able to grab a hold of them at the right time and land them in service of the business that we're working on. And then the final piece of our strategic roadmap really is around the talent and capability and the transformation. And I think this is tied with the element around technology and architecture. So for example, right, around technology and architecture, one of the very clear trends that we are working to modernize around our technology is really the notion of software-defined data center. Right? It's quite developing, and it's certainly becoming much more clear what that actually means. And so as a technology, there's things we can do around our architecture and set up to bring that into being. But at the same time, we find that we actually need to introduce a whole new set of skills into the landscape in order to effectively get traction and drive those. And so the third area of our strategic roadmap is around how do we make sure we have the people and the talent to be able to drive both our business transformation roadmap as well as our technology architecture roadmap evolution.
That's excellent. And I'm also curious, I'm always interested in speaking with CIOs who run technology within tech-centric and tech-forward organizations like your own.
As you walked through that, of course, you talked about the way in which you're weaving the strategic plans of your organization into the broader strategic imperatives of the company itself. And I'm wondering, just more generally speaking, how you see creating unique value from IT within an organization. I contrast this, for example, with a retailer or a manufacturer, both of which would probably have profound aspects of IT outside of the IT department, but still the central aspect, the portion of the organization where much of the IT talent is, would be in the IT department itself. Obviously, that's not the case in an organization like Lenovo. How do you see creating unique value from IT and as CIO within an organization where there is so much tech talent surrounding you?
That's also, I think, a very astute question. So I think we can tackle it from a couple of angles. The first one is that at Lenovo, I get to wear an additional hat as a consumer of technology, so as a customer, even internally. And not all CIOs are in that position. And I think that's quite an interesting aspect. So typically, of course, within organizations, the CIO is the provider of technology solutions. But because we have a data center group and a data center business, I also am privileged to be a customer in that sense. And so I'll talk about that a little first. I think there it's quite fun because, you know, I aspire to be the first and best user of Lenovo products. And quite frankly, that was easy when we primarily focused as a company on just PC 5 years ago. But honestly, it's much more exciting now. As our data center business has expanded, I'm a prime candidate for being a first customer as the CIO of a Fortune 500, because that's squarely in the target segment of who they want to be able to work with as well. And so in the data center group particularly, as we've pivoted to expand our computing, storage, network technologies and offerings, there's more opportunity than ever for collaboration. So as a customer, I'm able to actually dog food our own products, get a first look at them, use them when they make sense and they're a good fit. And if they don't, I give feedback about why not. Right? So for example, in the past year, we needed to have larger machines to support some of the scale-up aspects of our global SAP instance. And when I looked at our offerings, I found that it wasn't in the roadmap for a data center group. When I found that out, I said, well, that seems strange. This is quite a common use case in the industry. And so I went and spoke with our segment leader, Kim Stevenson, who I believe you knew, wondering why they didn't have something that supported this particular scenario, which I thought would be pretty widespread. And we had a good discussion, and she agreed. And shortly afterward, the roadmap got updated, and we had a scale-up server that would better be able to cover some of the needs for SAP large global instances. So that's just one example and one aspect where I think it's quite interesting to be a customer and able to create value in that way in terms of refining and iterating on the offering. Beyond that, I think another aspect I would like to tackle is what you said. Within a technology-centric company, there are certainly many centers of engineering excellence, especially around software within the company. And so I think that's one of the changing aspects of technology. As it becomes much more embedded, as digital becomes much more enmeshed in all aspects of what companies do, I think that's going to be a trend in general. And so for me, I recognize that I will not be the only person with competent and talented software engineers within the company or other engineering talent. And the way that I think about value is then just going back to what each team is actually good at. Right? So a really good example would be with some of our product engineering team. When we talk about what are the tools to enable the business, the conversation often is, well, you know, both of us could build this, right? The engineering team could build the tool, the IT team could build the tool. And so it comes down fundamentally then to what are the teams supposed to be focusing on as part of the mission. As the CIO, my mission is to provide the best and industry-leading solutions to enable our business and to help engage and understand our customers. Our product teams, right, that's not their mission. Their mission is how to go build the absolute best performing and best fit product for the target segment of customers to whom they aspire to serve. And so once we have that discussion, I think it helps clarify, which is, right, we get past the who could do this, because the reality is if you have talented engineers, they can do just about anything. But then we go to who is best suited to do this and what. How does it align against their role and the mission that they carry for the organization, then it becomes clear. Interestingly, I think that discussion and acknowledgement that, you know, all of these, our talent and engineers could build these systems, is actually pretty important, because as a point of validation, then right, they feel, okay, there's an acknowledgement that they are talented, but just that, right, relative to the CIO engineering organization versus, say, a solution and a customer product engineering organization, right, we could do any of those things, but we'll have our respective focus areas so that we can actually differentiate and add value in our unique spheres.
That's really interesting. I like the way in which you you differentiate that and talk about the way the influence that you and your team can have beyond. I also am fascinated, having gotten to know you over the past couple of years, Art. I know you spent an awful lot of time in China. Obviously, Lenovo, a Chinese-based company. You also spend a great deal of time in multiple centers in the U.S., where of course there are significant operations for the company as well. And I'm curious, as somebody who has woven yourself into both cultures, both sides of this robust business, what sorts of insights you can share about the commonalities and differences, things you've learned in working with a foot in the U.S. as well as a foot in China?
Yes, absolutely. I have a bit of a different point of view in the sense that I think sometimes we overplay, right, you know, one culture versus another, right, China versus the U.S. or any other such division. But, you know, I will say that I think the foundation is that as a company, Lenovo has invested significantly in building a global, we are Lenovo culture, right? And we have specific meetings around customer collaboration, innovation, and entrepreneurship behaviors. And that's our common foundation and language, so that when I visit any of our locations around the world, right, I can tell pretty quickly when I'm talking to a Lenovo team member. Now, on top of that foundation, right, I think what we've done is try to integrate aspects that fit well with the culture that we aspire to build. So from the China team, we channel a very strong focus on execution towards plan and a heavy bias towards action, which is let's get moving, right? The first step is the hardest to take, so let's make sure to move forward. From our international teams, I think we integrate in a very strong customer view and advocacy, as well as strategic analysis of the big picture and making sure we've really examined a problem from head to toe. Now, style-wise, and because there are style differences, I think there is a preference for more indirect ways of speaking up, surfacing, and resolving issues in China that I've noticed. And I've also noticed that occasionally there is a little bit more of a tendency for deference to hierarchy as well. Now, I think it's the most important part that I think here is that we should acknowledge there's no absolutes. So none of these characteristics are inherently or good by themselves. I think the key is to be aware of them and some of the behavioral patterns they drive. And so once you're aware of them, then you can figure out how you can actually fuse them together into the way you want to work and, you know, channel them to the advantage of the company. Now, if you know someone is more likely to accept a message because it came down the chain of command versus a peer or someone else telling them, right, then that might be the path of least resistance to getting a message around, right? If you sense that someone is uncomfortable, right, saying something, then that's okay, right? What's the quickest way to figure out the right channel through which to communicate to get something done? And so I think being aware of some of the differences in style preferences just helps in terms of expediting how you want to interact to achieve a particular goal. And within the company, I think the great thing is, of course, everyone wants us to win, right? Everyone within Lenovo wants the company to win. And so, right, when we do brush against, when we do have points of friction, right, when we do have things that we're struggling to work through, right, that becomes some of the common language when we try to figure out, okay, right, what's best for the company? That becomes a bridge that we can start to build over any of the differences towards a more constructive outcome.
That's excellent. As you do have operations in both places, and as I mentioned, you spend time in each places, I know you also have teams in both places. And I wonder how you've structured your team, if you've thought about different skills that are based in different geographies, or whether there are similar skills in different places. How have you thought about who goes where and what work gets done where?
So with a global footprint, I think we definitely get the benefit of figuring out how to optimize among our talent relative to location. And so we have given, let me back up a bit. I think part of it was also inherited because our operational headquarters were listed in Hong Kong and we have a headquarters there. And then we have large bases of operation in both Beijing as well as in Raleigh, North Carolina. And so naturally, there's a tendency for the customer-facing functions to co-locate with the business. And so that's one of the design principles, which is there are certain things where face-to-face just makes the effectiveness as well as efficiency as well as the experience of working with the business an order of magnitude better, right? Having a change management conversation about a particularly sticky point with the general manager of the country is much easier if you have someone who is in the business, has worked in there and, you know, literally in the trenches side by side for the last 5 years. That conversation is going to be a lot better versus having someone, you know, 12 time zones away over the phone middle of the night. Right? And so one of the things that we try to keep local is that interaction where the face-to-face, especially working through some of the more challenging change management and transformation trade-off discussions, we tend to keep very close to the business. So for that reason, we do have a lot of team in Beijing, in Raleigh, as well as we have senior staff who are more customer-facing around the change management and around managing the partnership that sit with our various leaders and general managers in major countries and points of presence globally. And so that's where, on kind of, we'll call it the partnership aspect of the organization is. For the delivery aspect, right, we do optimize for scale. And so because as an organization, we, of our Chinese heritage, we also have a large base of engineers in China to form the core of our product and delivery teams. Because there, as with other large engineering organizations, scale and co-location matter. And so right, for the more delivery and engineering centric part of organizations, we tend to cluster that in China because it's where they can get scale, but also we're benefited by the fact that a lot of the business teams are also in China. So that's an added bonus.
That's very interesting. I wonder if you can also, as you look forward the next couple of years, or we've talked about a few things that would qualify as rising trends in technology that you and Lenovo, more generally speaking, are taking advantage of. But I'm wondering if there are others that you've not yet mentioned that are making their way onto your roadmap, either as personal curiosities or areas that you and the team are excited to exploit more thoroughly.
Yes, let me. There's definitely a couple I would bring out. I think the evolving role of technology in any business, right? Digitalization and the transformation that entails, I think that's just going to, it's an ever expanding bubble. And so that's why I think at the leadership level for companies, whether it's a CIO, a CTO, a CDO, or anything else you want to call it, technology will only continue to accelerate its move from backstage to center stage, right? Which is how I put it with the team. And I think what that entails that even myself and my team are working through is really that puts such a premium on being able to act as that effective bridge and translator between the technology and the business world. I think there's going to be a period where, right, the business needs to acclimate to how important technology is becoming. And no matter how good we think we are in, you know, not speaking in techno mumbo jumbo or strings of acronyms, right, to really speak in a language that's, you know, concise, compelling, and easy to engage the business with, right? And it's a challenge for us, and I think it's a trend I want to exploit because I think so much of the value is how much can you get technology embedded into the business or get the business to an aha moment of, hey, I can do something fundamentally different with the technology because it enables new possibilities. As long as the team thinks they're in the backstage and they're a supporting character, right, it makes it that much harder to get there. And the more that we can think of ourselves as a central actor, right, in the play, right, of moving the company forward, it's so critical to helping get those aha moments of what technology can enable that I think is a huge opportunity, right? And that's kind of, I don't know if that's a strange thing for a CIO to say, but I think Right? There's so many times, more and more I'm convinced, it's not the technology, it's really, do you get people to understand it and get the full value out of it that has just huge value and huge untapped potential? So that's one aspect. This another thing I'm very excited about is this increasing infusion of design. And what I mean by that is really more human-centric computing and continuing where some of the Amazon and others have acclimated users, whether they're consumers or now in the enterprise world, to just expect good, seamless design. And so, again, I think it brings a new discipline in that will make our systems much more usable and therefore much more impactful. I think we've all seen systems where clearly the engineering team never thought about how someone who hadn't been, a specialized user for a long time would use the process. But I think bringing in design, not just on the surface level of fixing pixels and colors and buttons, but actually thinking from an empathetic view of how to design things for seamless usage, can unlock significant value in a way that we haven't really begun to capture fully today. Right? And then the third thing I'll mention that I'm very excited about is just, intelligent transformation. We have a word that we use internally around smartify. I don't know if it's actually an official word in the Oxford English Dictionary, but it's really applying AI to our value chain to not only help us get more efficient and effective, but I really think there's so much more that we can do around applying artificial intelligence to new areas that we're just starting to scratch the surface. I think I'm very much of the camp that the AI and the A should really stand for augmented rather than artificial. In our explorations, actually landing this the right way in conjunction with humans working with some of our models have made the overall efficiency much better than just something that's purely AI only, especially for more complex scenarios and use cases. So if I were to pick, those would be some of the top three things in terms of trends that I'm looking forward to go much more deeply around.
That's excellent. Well, Arthur, thank you so much for taking time with us today on the Forum on World Class IT, sharing your perspectives. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you again for having me, Peter.
Thanks for listening to the Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please rate us on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please join me next week when my guest will be Seth Goldman, the co-founder of Honest Tea.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategies' five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.